This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good.
I am your first bad ideas purveyor. My name is Gabriel Urbina.
I am your second bad ideas distributor. My name is Sarah Shackett.
And as my story today will maybe imply, I am perhaps your unlucky number three, Zach Valenti. For the idiot involved.
Oh my. Well, now I'm very excited, Zach. We're gonna have to see where this goes.
Welcome, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. For anybody new here, this is the way that we stay fresh as writers while also procrastinating the writing that we probably should be doing.
Of which I have a mountain that I'm currently very happy to be away from.
So thank you for joining us. I have the first story today, and you will have just 10 minutes to take this
story that we've heard before and had definitely a ton to prep.
That's right. So you get their honest to goodness reaction to this honest to goodness human idiocy. And then just 10 minutes to turn it into a book, a movie, streaming series for Disney Plus. Who knows?
I like the sound of that last one.
Only time will tell. And for anybody who'd like to read this article themselves and see some photos of,
okay,
I guess it'll be pretty clear what in a moment. The link is in the description.
The suspense is just getting ratcheted
up. I wish I could save the headline, but it dives in. So okay. I'm just going to hit you with the headline.
Before you hit us, where is this from? Where is this news story coming from?
This news story is from HuffPost, weird news section.
All right.
Straight away, we're jumping in.
All right, okay. Rip the Band-Aid.
Thieves steal duffel bag.
Okay.
And obviously don't realize that it is full of rare snakes. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
You know,
the punishment is in the crime.
There's like an urban urban myth about somebody stealing a duffel bag that they think is full of money or something, and inside there's just like the person's dog. This is way worse.
The owner of the snakes left them in a parking garage while giving a presentation. That's right.
The owner of the snakes.
Yep.
Why is that not a bad idea? I'm going to take my snakes with me in a car, but not bring them because
I just forgot.
Leave them in the parking lot.
I mean, they got to be outside. You can't bring your snakes indoors.
No, heaven for fresh air.
So put them in like the metal box. Okay, cool. All right.
San Jose, California, AP reporting, call it serpent surprise or a snake mistake. Thank you, writers. A California reptile lover says thieves who made off with his duffel bag probably thought they were taking swag. But it was full of snakes.
That slithery, crawly swag.
Brian Gundy, who breeds and sells reptiles through his business, for goodness snakes.
Actually live in the good place now.
Had been given a presentation, at Martin Luther King Library in downtown San Jose on Saturday and left his gear in a parking garage to retrieve his car. When he returned, he found a duffel bag containing three pythons and a lizard was gone.
Whoa.
Gundy tells Cron TV.
Also, poor lizard, for God's sakes.
I know. Well, I mean, he held his own.
All right.
Gundy,
I guess it was dark in the duffel bag. They were all asleep.
Hopefully they were all friends. Yeah.
Gundy tells Cron TV two snakes were later found in a dumpster, but he's worried about the safety of the other reptiles.
Oh, no.
Not necessarily dead.
But, yeah. But like pets being away from their homes, always upsetting.
And especially rare pets whom none of us would know how to handle.
Yeah.
Right, right, right. Oh, Jesus, it keeps going into the photos of the reptiles, and I'm like, no, bring me back to the article.
tell me that the presentation that he was giving was about, like, proper care of, you know, how to not lose track of your reptiles.
Yeah, right, right. He's filed a police report and hopes the garage surveillance video and help from the public will help catch the thieves. And with that, I'm setting a 10-minute timer.
All right, all right.
So, like, can we just ignore this idea and have a story about someone who inherits a business called For Goodness Snakes?
No, because that's a good idea. That's a completely good idea. So no.
That's when I knew I had to bring this to the show. It's that fucking name.
No, this was all outstanding. All right.
That would be snakes.
We could just rip off our good friend's wooden overcoats and have a story about two competing reptile breeding houses.
Yeah. What are Felix Trench and Tom Crowley doing? Nothing as those important two, as
those two slithery gentlemen would be great for this.
They would be.
Yes.
But okay.
Man, all right.
All right. So I guess, do we want to just be with the, is this still an intentional or an unintentional thief, do you think?
If we are going with the story of the thief, I would err on the side of unintentional.
Right. Okay.
Like, I'm kind of thinking of something like Raising Arizona, where, you know, like, whoever, some kind of scumbaggy kind of person that's been, you know, just living on their own for a long time, kind of eking out an existence, is in very much in this place of, you know, Randy only cares about Randy. You know, Randy just takes care of number one and that's it.
Right.
In the course of going about his Randy day, that sounds a lot dirtier than I meant it to.
Tom Crowley? Where are Tom Crowley and Felix Trench is my question.
You know, steals this duffel bag thinking that it is full of money, gets home, and all of a sudden there's three pythons and a lizard. And then it's kind of a comedy about him having to
deal with.
Yeah, to figure out how to do this. And they, of course, immediately, like, are set loose inside his trailer or whatever.
Right.
Jesus.
And
is like Raising Arizona, there's like a switch and they become like the, not human, but like reptilian connection that Randy has always craved.
Right, exactly.
Missing from Randy's life.
He all of a sudden has to kind of care for things and about things that are not just himself.
Right, and finds, as people often do, that incredibly rewarding.
Yes.
And would be willing then to go to lengths to protect his three pythons and one lizard.
Right. I imagine the pythons might help him with his rat problem.
That's right. Yeah.
That's fair.
Because Lord knows Randy has had a rat problem.
Oh, Jesus.
I mean, that trailer is not rated.
No, it isn't. It's in a bad, it's in a bad state.
It's not in a good place.
No, not a good place.
Anyway.
Randy does his best.
Yes, with all of that said, I do worry about kind of that carrying it through an entire, say, film's worth of material.
Right.
Especially, also, Raising Arizona exists.
Also, Raising Arizona does exist. Yeah. Yes. You could throw in a lot more yodeling into this idea, and that, but that would only get us
so far.
So far.
It's true.
No, just because I think that reptiles especially are, once you get sort of past the initial, like, oh my God, it's a snake. They're kind of low activity creatures.
Right.
They kind of tend to sort of like coil around somewhere.
Right. And you'd never see air snake.
No,
air,
exactly.
Air bud is the reference there.
Like, yeah.
I thought you were going towards a snakes on a plane sort of place.
No.
And I was like, I mean, we've seen it. We've seen exactly how good it can be.
Was the movie MVP, was that the monkey that plays
Most Valuable primate.
Yeah, that was, what did Buddy play, hockey?
I don't remember.
I forget. I think there was a sequel. I think there were a couple sports involved in that franchise.
Air Bud was football.
No, that was basketball.
Oh, was it basketball?
Basketball, yeah. I think.
One of them was football.
Yeah.
I think Most those Valuable all Primate had sequels. Was hockey.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that Air Bud crossed over. I think that Air Bud sort of,
I'm
you
sorry,
know.
I'm just dragging.
It's like a Michael Jordan.
Michael Jordan, kind of exactly, yeah. But all right, but back to Randy and his
snakes are low activity and wouldn't make for good animals play sports movies.
So I think that there needs to sort of be something else, whether it is
trying to sell them, and like it becomes sort of a mob activity kind of a thing.
You know what it might be? Hmm. It might be as simple as Randy is someone that pretty much exists sealed inside his trailer and doesn't ever go out, and just kind of like only ever goes out in order to steal enough money to be able to like go by the grocery store and buy whatever he needs. But other than that, he's kind of someone that like just likes to live completely sealed off from everyone else. But now all of a sudden there are three boas in his trailer. So he has to stay out of it.
In that case, if he's something of a shut-in, then I don't think he should steal the bag.
Okay.
I think that like there is some sort of mix up where the bag is delivered to him.
Okay.
Or something.
Okay.
And he could then, you know, having the reptiles and needing to take care of them would then sort of get him out into the world, and he would discover that like maybe he's a cool thief, or, you know, that he can sort of Walter White his way around these like shady people who are moving snakes. And that way, you know, you don't have to sort of deal with the tension of like, this is a small town crook versus, and that's, you know, his selfishness is kind of what's wrong with him, versus like, this is someone who has shut themselves off from the world so they don't have to feel it.
Alternatively, okay. Alternative pitch, although I do like that. We may return to that in just a second.
Give me your alternate though.
Randy lives in like a cabin in Nova Scotia. And the thing that accidentally gets delivered with him, to him, like that his three boas and the lizard,
right,
is the last kind of like mail delivery before there's a huge blizzard. And he is snowed in for like snakes. 8 days.
Oh,
and
man.
It's one. And now all of a sudden it's kind of like the Life of Pi thing of the only way that you're going to be able to survive being in close proximity to a predator is kind of learning how to interface with them and learning kind of how to care for them.
Yeah, we need to figure out something that isn't snow, though, because doesn't that, like, make, doesn't cold make reptiles?
It does, it does. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it would make them need to be
aggressive
near him.
No, maybe.
For warmth, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe Randy has a very well-heated cabin. God.
Sure,
yeah.
I mean, that's if you live in Nova Scotia, I imagine you have a pretty good heating system.
Yeah, he's invested in that.
And
yeah.
Then we figured out how to make a movie that was 60 minutes of a man in bed with reptiles.
Eat your heart out, Hateful Eight.
And you know what it is in that case? Then Randy is like some tech millionaire and he's bought like 14 acres of private land, and he's got his like automated huge house, and he's one of these like, you know, like I'm just gonna now like live by myself and like be cut off from society and it's gonna be amazing.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's kind of like, why did I get this huge house with all these things? These snakes could be anywhere. But that, of course, sort of takes us more into kind of a like dark thriller territory. Now, all of a sudden, there's kind of a like component of.
I think you could probably play. You could ride the line with comedy a bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, that takes us. If it's like, sort of a tech bro who's exited the real world.
That's right. Yeah, I'm kind of thinking like a different version of Oscar Isaac's character in Ex Machina. Yeah.
Then the thing that you have to, it really does have to be like snowed in Nova Scotia, there the power gets cut, because this guy has killer drones. Like strapping a knife to a Roomba, like that's
amateur hour.
This guy has galaxy brained so far away from that. You know, it could kill snakes in an instant.
Oh, that's great.
Although at some point he might strap a knife to a Roomba.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got a battery.
No, but you know what it is? His like killer defense drones. They're thermal visioned and they can't deal with cold-blooded organisms. Yeah. So there, you know,
there
like he
go.
Was
there
very
go.
That's good.
He was prepared to deal with any human intruder.
Sure.
Yeah.
God damn.
That's
it's hard to
deeply
think of everything.
Silly. I love it. Yeah. We need like And as like a satire of like
Home Alone
bros,
meets Anaconda,
like
set in the setting of Ex Machina.
Sold. No, and then all of a sudden it's kind of about like him learning how to like do things again with his hands and sort of like learning right. about kind of, you know.
And also maybe like switch his thinking from himself to another living creature.
Yep. And I think that that is kind of like the big switch that needs to happen of kind of he has to go from I need to kill these fucking snakes to I need to coexist with these snakes until we can get out of here.
Right.
And that, I think, is the big switch that will let him leave his house ever again.
Or not.
Yes.
And that is time.
Mm. Mm. All right. What was the name one more time of this gentleman's
business?
Yes.
I believe it was For Goodness Snakes.
For Goodness Snakes.
It's just so good. Yeah, so you great. Can't write it.
No. Although that's not a terrible title for the movie.
It really isn't.
Brian Gundy. I hope your business is.
I hope it's thriving. Yeah. Megan Amram should go buy some snakes.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And with that, we're going to go check out For Goodness Snakes website and be back after this break.
Hey everybody, Gabrielle here. We're gonna get back to our next terrible idea in just a second. But before we do that, I wanna take a moment to tell you about a cool podcast that you should really check out if you like audio fiction. It's called Outliers, Stories from the Edge of History. And it's an anthology series made by Historic Royal Palaces, a charity that manages some of the UK's most famous palaces, and Rusty Quill, the folks behind the brilliant Magnus Archives. Outliers is a series of stories about different moments of change and tension in history, but told from the perspective of the people that don't normally get to feature in the history books. Their second season starts tomorrow, November 5th. And, well, it actually means a lot to me personally if you tuned in, because I got to write the story that's kicking off season 2. It's a tale of firefighting in old London, and it features so many explosions. So, please, if you want to hear that, plus new original work from the creators of Wooden Overcoats, The Far Meridian, We Fix Space Junk, and so many other shows, mark your calendars and tune into Outliers, Stories from the Edge of History, wherever quality podcasts are found or at rustyquill.com/outliers. All right, back to the show.
Again for another bad idea.
We survived the snakes.
We did.
No, they got us. They got us.
Really, it was the title of the store.
This show is now being recorded from the stomach of an anaconda.
Well, that's unfortunate. because we're about to go really the opposite place to the stomach of an anaconda.
Oh my. Okay.
Space, gentlemen.
Ooh. Oh shit, space. That is the opposite.
That is pretty much the opposite. Yeah.
But then not space.
okay.
This comes to us from The Verge's TLDR section. Mm. And it's short and I'm just going to read it. I recommend that you look at the picture because it is both adorable and deeply humiliating. So Samsung's, I'm doing air quotes with my hands, space selfie balloon.
Oh my God.
What? Crash lands on Michigan farm.
Ah, wait a minute.
Yep.
Oh shit.
A device.
Space selfie balloon.
Yes.
All right, cool.
Yep. So a device used by Samsung to launch. I feel so bad for her. Cara Delevingne selfie into space.
What?
Yes. Has apparently made a dramatic return to Earth. Nancy, I'm sorry, I'm going to mispronounce this name. Nancy Mumbi Welk of Gradiote County, Michigan, heard a loud crash outside her farmland home this weekend and discovered a large object in her backyard. Unbelievable. Look at what just fell out of the sky. And 911 is baffled and it's caught up in our tree.
Holy
shit. She
posted
to Facebook along with a photo.
Lucky it didn't hit her house.
Yeah.
Quote, we realized it had fallen from the sky. Mumbi Welk told NBC News. It looked like a satellite. The device carried both a Samsung logo and that of a South Dakota-based high-altitude balloon manufacturer, Raven Industries, which eventually came to collect the crashed apparatus. Quote, no injuries occurred and the balloon was subsequently retrieved. Samsung said to NBC, we regret any inconvenience this may have caused. The company claims that the landing was, quote, planned and happened in a, quote, selected rural area. As PR stunts go, this one was over the top even by Samsung standards. The, quote, space selfie program involved a photo of Cara Delevingne that was taken on a Galaxy S10 Plus and was supposedly, quote, the world's first selfie sent to space. Users could then upload their own photos to a website for a chance to see them displayed on the screen of a Galaxy S10 5G on board the balloon. Quote, our relentless pioneering spirit continues to show that amazing things happen on Samsung screens, even from the stratosphere.
God,
Samsung Europe CMO Benjamin Braun, which is a great name, said at the launch event, quote, our ethos is do what you can't. And the Samsung space selfie is just that. We continually break the boundaries of what is possible with innovation. And tonight's space selfie launch is no different. End quote.
You know, we have such a real problem with the amount of debris that is in orbit right now.
Yes, we do.
And it is so incredibly dangerous. And the fact that we are apparently trying to put ostentatiously useless junk up there
really says something.
Yeah.
I'm putting 10 minutes on the clock. And
nothing,
you guys,
oh my God.
Nothing against Cara Delevingne, who I think is great, but everything against everyone else that was involved in this.
I saw this and I was a little bit like, oh, this isn't quite a metaphor for Cara Delevingne's career, but it makes me feel bad.
Yeah. Well,
my God.
Oh, right, 10
minutes on the clock.
Yeah, I think it's a really good metaphor for how some people perceive Cara Delevingne. But
that's fair.
So
yeah.
God, I am
space selfie machine.
Wow.
Crashing in the farmland of Michigan.
My God. I mean, my first thing was like, I wonder if there was some thought of like alien invasion. Like
right.
When they first were like, what the fuck was that? Especially if there was any lights involved.
Right, like, right, right. No, it's a real kind of like the pod that carries Clark Kent from Krypton landing in like the Kent's farm. Of just kind of like, what is happening? And,
yeah,
like, you
exactly.
That's actually the closest real life story I think I've seen to that.
Yeah.
And then seeing the brand logos is like, that's the moment you know that this is just some disappointing bullcrap.
Right, right. Although there's a part of me that really kind of wants to do the like, you know, small town. Where was this? Oklahoma?
This was in Michigan.
Michigan. I really want the story of kind of like the young up and coming reporter in Michigan that really wants it to be a like Roswell, New Mexico style conspiracy.
Right.
And is kind of going like, no. Like there's no way that it's something this dumb. It has to be, this has to be the stupidest excuse that NASA has for their spy satellite, for their Kryptonian welcome wagon, for their mind control orbital
it's
laser
like
devices.
The opposite of Ace in the Hole.
Right. And everyone just kind of has to keep being like, no, it's just a selfie. It's just a spelfie.
A space selfie. A spelfie. It is a single Galaxy S5 or whatever.
Right.
That is strapped to the satellite.
I do love the image of kind of them hiking up to do this thing. It's just big satellite. And they're like, what's in there? And then they open it up. And there's a smaller kind of metal case inside of it. And they open that one up. And there's a smaller, all the way down, like six layers down.
No,
there's the Galaxy.
And
there's
a phone.
With like a single selfie on it.
Right. And a couple of like extra chargers for when it runs out of battery.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh my God.
What would be really interesting is if like they retrieve the phone and then suddenly all the other selfies start coming in.
Mm.
because suddenly the phone has signal.
Oh, right. Like all of a sudden it's back in 3G range or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Oh, Jesus. Right. But I think that like it has to be a story about kind of the young kid that retrieves this phone and is convinced that it is some grand conspiracy or something like that.
Right. And then maybe the story of like the rest of the town making that dream a reality for that kid.
Or it's just like literally aliens. Like, you know, like you either, it either needs to be like really small and banal, or you need to kind of supersize it and make it sort of be like actually aliens.
Right. I mean, I think the like, the middle of the road way to go about it is that it's a government sort of testing program mm-hmm. utilizing alien technology that it's like, you know, so you have like that back and forth where it's like okay. It lands and they're like, oh my God, it's aliens. And they're like, no, this is definitely humans. Phone. But then it's like, whoa, it can do something that like nothing else can.
I like that.
That's interesting. Yeah.
I like that. All of a sudden, it's like the remote from Click, where you know you right. put something
that,
to it.
And right, that popped into my brain.
Mm-hmm. It has apps that no other phone has ever had.
Right, I'm not sure like how far you can push that.
And that may be a reveal for kind of like the end. You could sort of treat it in a safety not guaranteed kind of a way for a while, and then in the way that movie does definitively have an answer for: is the time travel machine they're building real? This film can definitively have an answer of is this alien technology or not?
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like has like a couple different movements. It's sort of first movement, holy crap, what was that? Aliens.
Right.
Then, you know, movement two, they get there, getting the thing open. Movement three, oh, it's just a stupid cell phone. You know, Billy, why did you get us all riled up? You always have these like stupid flights of fancy.
Right.
And, you know, and now I have to close the bar to come and help you out with this thing. And, you know, Sheila had to close down the store. Grumble, 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 grumble.
Right.
And so, you know, and then Billy has to feel guilty about it. But Billy still has the phone. And then, like, you know, for a while, it's kind of Billy insisting, no, 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 guys, like, there's something about this. It can't just be a phone. And everyone going, you know, shut up. Stop crying wolf. And then, and it's probably around the middle of the story,
Sure. All
of a sudden, Billy discovers that the phone can stop cars, or the phone can, you know, control people's minds or something.
Right, or like transform matter or do something that is
right.
impossible to our understanding of physics.
Right.
If we want, like, that Disney Plus money, which... I think we do.
Yeah.
Call us Bob Iger. Is that the one? Is he still there?
I don't think he's still.
I'm not sure.
In the driver's seat, but.
I'm sure Bob has money, though. Bob wants to give us some money.
Also,
yeah.
Abigail we'll take your call Disney, too. You seem nice.
Yeah.
we could age down so that these are actual kids.
Oh, sure.
And then that's your pilot for a TV show where suddenly they have like a magic phone.
Right.
That allows them to do things and sort of do impossible things in this small town. And you can have the stories gradually get bigger and bigger. And maybe you have some of these, you know, incompetent like G-men who are after it that they have to avoid.
I like that. I like that. And it's kind of probably like an ALF thing of the G-men kind of come by every so often.
Right.
Right.
But most of the time it's them dealing with their middle school problems.
I got it. It's like a Stargate.
A Stargate?
Yeah, it's like a transporting sort of the thing that they have in Rick and Morty that like
portal gun.
Yeah, yeah. That lets them
and so that, so it was floating in space because like you know you can't just have like things coming out of that thing on Earth,
no,
right?
Of course not.
And so it crashes down to Earth. Now the kids are able to take adventures in distant quantum realms,
right?
And so then you have a TV show.
So let me. Let me make
Step
sure
one, interdimensional transport. Step two, TV show. Step three, profit.
Let me make sure I've understood the base idea here.
Yeah. 2 minutes 40, by the way.
It is basically the middle America middle school kids version of, as far as I can understand, more or less, I Dream of Jeannie. Crossed with the portal gun from Rick and Morty.
I guess so. I don't know. I Dream of Jeannie. So
very much this kind is, of like
it's
like
a very old school television show where a typical suburban guy has a magic lamp where his wife Jeannie lives and she can grant wishes and stuff.
And it is very deeply sexist in the ways that like the 1970s were. I think it was from the 70s.
No, I think I Dream of Jeannie earlier.
I think Peter Coleman and Ben did something that was like a spoof on this.
That makes sense.
That would make sense.
Where he ended up like, I think he like rubbed his doorstop.
Oh no.
And he ended up with this like kind of shitty Jeannie roommate.
Oh no.
That just like made glitter in their apartment all the time.
But the sort of bigger point is that it is something that it's people dealing with day-to-day activities, but there is one kind of big supernatural thing or person or intelligence kind of thrown in.
Right.
That is kind of like, I mean, why complain about homework? You can just turn it into a magical elephant. And the kids and the family kind of have to be like, no, like that only makes it that's only a short-term solution.
In fact, it makes some more problems that we then have to solve. Yeah.
Right. Our homework wasn't trampling our backyard.
Right. And it's kind of a very sort of like wholesome, like, you know, at the end of the day, sort of down to earthness is the sort of like greatest kind of magic sort of a thing.
Yes. Friendship is magic. As has been said.
With the asterisk of wholesome, except for the rampant sexism. Yes.
Got it. Jesus.
But sort of that, but instead of kind of a genie, now it's a portal gun that is it sentient? Is like the...
Well, so that's a question. I think it depends on how the thing operates.
Right, whether it's something that they can uncover or whether it's something that sort of pairs with a user or something
like that.
Siri? Like, is there a Siri and Alexa in there?
Probably, but like sort of like in the new She-Ra, they have to like uncover it, you know?
And do they have to kind of like unshackle it? They need to take off the like...
The restraining bolt or something like that.
Oh, that was time.
Oh, well. Something to think about for the second season. That can be the big season one finale.
Once we get the writer's room together, we can really jam on something.
Yeah.
That's right. Come at us, Disney Plus.
No, and you know what it is? Season one, before the phone is unshackled, it's things come to them. Mm-hmm. Once the phone is unshackled for season two, they go to places. Yeah. Like all of a sudden, now they are in control. Ooh.
Hell yes.
Yeah, Disney Plus. Give us a call. We'll make this happen.
Well, we're going to portal ourselves to the next segment. We'll see you on the other side.
Hey guys, Gabrielle again. This is going to be even quicker. Just want to remind you that Zach, Sarah, and I have a new anthology series called 0 Hours. It is out right now. It's 7 stories about the way that the world ends, or at least about things that feel like they're the end of the world. It features a lot of our favorite collaborators. It's new stories by us. You can check that out right now. Just look for 0 Hours in your favorite podcasting app or visit zerohourspodcast.com. It's that easy, and this was this quick. Now back to the show. Everybody, welcome back to No Bad Ideas. And are you guys ready for our third idea?
I mean, no, but can I stop it?
You know, we're recording this a little bit before Halloween. So I wanted to bring you guys something spooky. To get in the mood.
Okay, I'm ready.
To really do this.
But is it spooky?
I think that is up to the audience to decide. I think that
something
they are going to be
that
the
word makes me so happy every time I hear it.
You can't not smile.
They're going to be the ultimate arbiters of whether this is spoopy or not.
I want the history of spoopy at some point, but that's another show.
All right. Much like Zach's idea, mine comes from the weird news section of the Huffington Post.
All right.
There's going to be a link in the description for this episode. Dear audience, for the first time in the history of No Bad Ideas, I strongly, strongly, strongly recommend that you do not click on this link unless you feel that you are too well rested and want something that is going to keep you up at night.
Okay.
Because there are photos in this thing and they are hella photos. So, you guys ready to dive into this bad idea?
No, not anymore.
All righty, here we go. The headline reads, Minnesota Museum holds creepiest doll contest.
Nope, don't want it.
Where's tickets?
The subtitle reads, creepy doll curator Dan Nowakowski says that for a lot of the dolls, the freakiness is all in the eyes.
Oh, amazing business card also. Oh,
boy.
Creepy doll curator.
So the...
It's all in the eyes.
The terrifying article reads, a Minnesota museum has turned its creepiest dolls loose just in time for Halloween.
I don't want it.
The History Center of Olmsted County in Rochester has posted photos. Do not click on the link. And videos, really don't click on that link, of its miniature terrors on social media, taking votes for the most nightmarish one.
This is the opposite of Fat Bear Week, and I don't like it.
Curator Dan Nowakowski told Minnesota Public Radio that for a lot of the dolls, the freakiness is all in their eyes, as he said before. Some have movable eyelids that snap open when you lift the dolls up. The paint has chipped off the face of another contender, leaving it looking like a mummy. Nowakowski says the dolls weren't intended to be frightening when they were made, but damage from play and the passage of time have turned them creepy.
My God.
Voting continues through Thursday. The winner and runner-up will be displayed on Halloween. All right.
Displayed where?
I think
in the place where all the other creepy dolls are.
I think it's going to be given like a place of honor in the museum's exhibit.
Sure.
Jesus.
Keep them all in there.
Do we have a timer?
We will in just a moment. 10 minutes for a good idea based on a creepy doll competition starting now.
So go ahead.
The low hanging fruit is another Chucky movie.
Right, like another Child's Play.
Yeah, I mean, that's just like the first thing that pops to mind. It's just like, you have a bunch of creepy dolls. Everybody's like going to the thing. And of course, one of them has its eyes open in a different way.
Yeah, sure.
And it's like, this is my mecca. Right. Let's get fucking weird and murderous.
Let's get fucking weird and murderous. Good title.
Yeah,
good title.
No, it's a good title for something.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, my mind went not to Chucky, but to a film that the three of us watched in school called Bunny Lake is Missing, where there is a scene that takes place in quote unquote a doll hospital.
Oh, right.
That's right.
Oh,
yes.
Jesus.
And it is the worst thing. But I kind of would be interested in doing. Did y'all see Toy Story 4?
Yes.
No.
Yeah. So there is a section of Toy Story 4 that takes place in sort of an antique store. And there are some dolls that have been worn from play and taken on kind of a sinister bent.
Yeah.
And a doll that is like perfectly pristine, but has taken on sort of a sinister mindset. Mm-hmm. And so I would be interested in doing something kind of like that, where these dolls look hideous, but they're just like wholesome and looking for a companionship.
Aww.
I don't know. This is my way of avoiding horror movies.
All they want is to be played with.
Yeah.
Although that is kind of creepy in its own way. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, basically treating it this like creepy doll contest as sort of, you know, more of a like, I'm trying to think for I have completely blanked on the title of the very famous mockumentary about dog shows.
Oh, Best in Show.
Best in Show. Thank you. And just like, these dolls all know each other. They're all friends. They're like, there's a rivalry for like the creepiest. There's the guys whose eyes can snap right open. And then there's the one with the eye that swivels and everybody loves the swivel. You know?
I do like the idea of it being a mockumentary about all the people that are going to this like creepy doll competition.
That would be fun.
And there's basically all the different iterations of Wednesday Addams throughout America.
Wow.
But I think you would get gradations of Wednesday Addams.
Yes, absolutely.
That would be interesting.
Absolutely. Yes.
We just take a camera and follow around this curator because
I'm here for this.
Jesus.
Yeah, no. And I think that it would be really fun. And you kind of have like all the things that they're doing to get ready for the, you know, the big competition. You maybe have someone that has one doll that they're just like, in all the buildup, it's just like in a case. They never take it out. And that's sort of a big buildup of like, what's in the case? Like, we've seen everyone else's dolls getting like creepier and creepier in preparation for the big event.
Do people keep asking what's in the box?
What's in the box?
Oh my God.
Right. Contestant 953 just like keeps his doll in the box at all times the big event.
Is contestant 953 like the hands down like champion? Like they win every year?
Maybe.
It's like this year they don't have it. Like, did they bring the thing that like has won them the last three
years?
Right.
No, I like that. Like, you know, but and everybody already knows it. So everyone is kind of like, oh yeah, no. You can't beat Kevin. And everyone is like, is Kevin the contestant? They're like, no. Kevin is the doll. It's like, you know, like what's Kevin like? You can't describe Kevin. You have to.
You just experience.
You have to see Kevin.
So is it no photos allowed? Feel like they would Google the last year's winner.
Sure, that's
to
a good
see Kevin.
That's a good question. Maybe. Sure.
Or maybe like they only allow Polaroids, and so they're all incredibly faded and ghostly.
All the photos of Kevin come out blurry.
Yeah.
It's this like urban myth thing of like
Jesus. Well, but that could be like this is the first year they've allowed it to be documented.
Sure. Right. Like before, it was all kind of like underground. Yeah, and like it's the last year that, you know, Professor whoever of the museum is curating it. He's retiring it.
Right.
So he's retiring. So he's been doing it for 25 years. They want to commemorate it.
It's like a retrospective.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a celebration of this guy and this community as much as it is the contest.
Right.
Right.
And that is one of these things of everyone is incredibly competitive. But everyone also kind of likes each other because they're the only people in the world that
kinda, understand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a real documentary on Netflix about a cat pageant that reminds me very strongly of this idea. Whoa. It is fucking quality content, people.
Good to know.
Oh my gosh. I don't watch the baking show, but I imagine like I feel like that's my reference for the vibes.
Gotcha.
Of just like we're competing, but we also deeply love each other.
And I assume that a lot of things kind of go wrong along the way.
Sure.
Like someone's doll that they spent like 6 months preparing accidentally gets sent to Paraguay. And so they need to kind of buy a new doll and like
creep it up very quickly.
But is there any paranormal element in it? I'm sorry for trying to veer this back.
No, that's okay. That's okay.
Like is there Chucky in the background of this whole thing? Like sort of in the and maybe like in like a Tyler Durden style, like three frames of like, you
sure.
know, like, oh, did I just see what I thought?
If there is, my guess would be that it is not confirmed until towards the end of the movie.
Absolutely.
Like there's sort of like a real tension and there's maybe even stuff like that, like, oh, all the photos of Kevin come out blurry. Nobody knows how contestant 953 manages to do it. But like. And there's sort of things that you're kind of like, I don't know, like,
is this just sort of urban lore and just part of the camaraderie? It seems weird. And there can be a moment where it turns and is weird.
Yeah. I like that. So does it end kind of with a bloodbath of kind of everyone, like everyone's dolls rising up against them?
God.
I don't think so. Unless like it's to commemorate the like Professor X, I'm just going to say because we don't have a name. Retiring means like a ritual sacrifice or something.
Right.
Of him?
I don't know.
Or of everyone else, and then he, you know, turns back into like the 20-year-old version of himself.
Right, and the cycle begins.
Oh God.
Again.
Yeah. He's been running this museum since 1723, you know?
Yo, that's horrifying. I love that.
And the entire thing has kind of been like over the course of 20 years, he's been slowly conditioning these people. And there's been like, you know, the like getting them attuned to the dark runes or whatever.
No one serves iced tea like the professor.
Yeah, like an old family recipe. Emphasis on the old.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My God.
And in that case, like, it's a little bit, it's an interesting line to walk with the mockumentary element, because like in What We Do in the Shadows, like, it's very like the relationship between, there's vampires that eat humans and a human film crew is established very early on. Yeah. So this is a twist.
Yeah, yeah. You know what happens to everyone else, though, to all the contestants that got sacrificed in order to feed the professor's longevity?
They become the next round of dolls.
They become dolls. Yeah, yeah. They're sort of, they sort of turn into dolls of themselves, and they're an exhibit now.
No.
Yeah, like, that's how the professor has been building up his
collection. Yeah, monster. Over time.
And that can be the big prize of, kind of, everyone is vying not just for like a cash prize, but for the winning doll gets to go in the professor's like exhibit collection, permanently. Sure. Yeah.
In that case, I have a feeling that it's not everyone who dies, but like a select cadre.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. I feel like we'd have to decide they are the, like, the Biffs of the bunch, if that makes sense. This is a Back to the Future reference to douchebags archetypically. I guess that would make sense to me. I don't know.
It sort of depends on whether the professor is successful or not.
Right.
Right. I was like, assuming that they would be.
Which, like, down. And in that case, I think that, yes, they would be the Biffs of the bunch. And then cut to kind of, like, outside the person that we actually like. And they're sort of going, like, you know, we'll be back next year. You know, next year our doll is going to be so creepy. Like, it's going to be the creepiest thing that these people have ever seen.
Can you imagine, like, the misfits at a creepy doll convention? Like, the not cool kids right. at a creepy doll convention?
Antigone Funn has nothing on
them. I know. Antigone Funn is so normal.
In the last couple of seconds, any title suggestions for this?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I'm racking my brains, too.
I think this...
Yeah, like, the only thing that I can think of is, like, Playtime or something like that.
Yeah. Right. Friends, like, best friends forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know. Dolls on Parade.
Mm.
I'm trying to think of like show title things.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, let's come back to it another time, because that is the end of our allotted time for this idea.
All right.
But very nice and done, guys.
Creepy seasonal idea.
Happy Halloween, everyone.
The pumpkin spice latte of no bad ideas.
And again, I cannot stress how much I do not recommend visiting the website and clicking on that image gallery.
I'm clicking on that image gallery.
Thank you for shielding us by reading that on your laptop. That was excellent.
Oh, yes.
I have to see what we were talking about. I'm sorry.
All right, well, let's go do that, and we'll be back next week with a new set of bad ideas for all of you.
With or without Zach, who may be dead.
This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Many thanks to our patrons for their partnership in making this show happen. And a special shout out to our idealist member, Rena Sarame. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at patreon.com/nobadideas. And if you love the show, please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks. See you next week.